No matter what anybody tells you, words and ideas can change the world.
Okay, terrific.
Language and writing were made available.
He'll teach you everything.
I'm writing this down. This is good stuff.
Hey, I'm John. This is John Helps You Write Better. And today I want to talk to you about the X-Men. It is not terribly a big surprise that I am, of course, a comic book nerd. I grew up on comic books, and in particular, I grew up on the X-Men. And they came to me, or I discovered them at a time where I had a lot in common with them. These were stories of teenagers sort of discovering their place in the world, and I was a young teenager trying to figure out my place in the world. And the X-Men stories always appealed to me in some way, in the same way slightly that Spider-Man did or that Batman did, different facets of how I thought and how I enjoyed story. But the X-Men always were something special. They felt more emotional than anything else. And like any good teen drama, because that's really what the X-Men are, it has all the typical teen drama components. Love triangles, mistaken identity, clones, time travel, alternate dimension versions of yourself, alien impersonators, big giant supervillains trying to take over the world, superpowered characters so mighty that they have to create like protective mental barriers against themselves, social justice issues, complicated political statements boiled down to hyper-simplistic cliches, big villain monologues, lots of bright colors, and, you know, as with any teenager, hyper-physique and not a pimple in sight, you know, realistic teenager stuff. But no matter what, and no matter the nature of all those things, the X-Men stories are impactful because they are fundamentally stories of a marginalized community going up against a majority community. And you can plug and play whatever minority you want. You can read them as LGBTQ+. You can read them as social justice movements. You can read them as people of color, black civil rights, just general rights and advocacy. You can plug and play anybody, Latin, AAPI, it all falls under the X-Men umbrella because the majority are mostly angry white people who hate and vilify and fear and demonize the minority who is different, either visually represented different, they look different than the majority, or they are housing something secret within them that should it get out, a superpower, it will change the way they are perceived. These issues and these feelings feel very adolescent, very frenetic, because you're a bubbling mass of hormones and chemicals and wants and interests, and you feel if you let any of this out, the people around you, the adults around you, the majority around you will not really understand or relate to you in the same way anymore. That part of the X-Men really stuck with me. But X-Men stories are not easy to explain. Here is an example. I'm going to simplify one down as best I can. Character A loves character B. They love each other very super much. And character B decides I should have a baby with character A. So she does. Only it's a heteronormative couple, just so we're clear on things in case I start using pronouns. Character A discovers that character B is not the actual character B, but a clone of character B. And he's had a baby with clone character B. Now, the real character B comes back. Wherever character B actually was is a whole big problem that the character, everybody will have to deal with in a minute because they're going to make it everybody's problem. But clone character B gets angry that real character B comes back and feels betrayed by character A, and character A feels torn in this love triangle between 2/3 people because there's two different versions of B. There's B and clone B, and character A feels conflicted. This conflict doesn't get resolved because character A doesn't really know what to do. So clone character B goes evil, you know, like you do. So now evil clone B takes the baby and gives the baby to an enemy of character A and character B, and it's a whole thing. So now everybody has to go rescue the baby. But original character B is distraught because that means she might have to kill clone B, and it's a whole thing. And clone B is evil at this point. So clone B is the bad guy or one of the bad guys, and the team rescues the baby only to discover that the bad guy and evil clone lady have given the baby some kind of virus, some super dangerous thing that will kill the baby, and it's terrible. And the only cure, of course, isn't to use, you know, the hyper genius fellow characters around you. The only cure is to send the baby into the future, where hopefully future versions of character A and character B and their descendants and other characters will have some kind of cure for the baby in the future. So they send a baby just whoosh off to the future. And then later, literally, well, since it's time travel now, like the same day, depending on how you want to interpret the book, an adult version of the baby comes back and plays such a seminal role in the rest of the stories dealing with clone character B that they build 1/3 of the entire X-Men mythology around the baby as an adult man. And who he either goes off and leads his own team of X people, or he seamlessly blends in and out of different teams. And then he later raises kind of his daughter, kind of his granddaughter. It gets very confusing at that point because it depends on who's writing the series. And then, depending on how else you want to do it, an alternate version of the grown adult version of the baby who didn't get the virus in their universe suddenly comes over to this universe, interacts with all of them. But only after character C's son gets so angry about character C dying and not being involved in character A, character B, and the clone, that character C's son creates an alternate reality where a million other things happen. See, it's just like typical teen drama, isn't it? Just like 8th grade, 9th grade, and 10th grade math class and gym class. Now imagine that level of complexity multiple times a month, with a rotating cast of between 7 and 14 characters. That's the typical X-Men experience. That's the comic book experience. Now take a fraction of that and port it over to a cartoon. When I was a teenager, and when my brother was much younger, he and I, after school, would watch the X-Men cartoon. You can still find it in its original format on Disney Plus. And it was, from what I remember, though I am not that kid, and that's going to be important in a second, though I am not that kid and my memories of being that young and happy-ish are sort of ghosts and flashes of things, I remember that cartoon and I remember liking that cartoon because I, a teenager, was seeing cartoon teenagers who also had superpowers and were, you know, doing stuff against really cool bad guys. It was just a nice cartoon to watch. Time passes, I change, everybody changes, things, you know, move forward, and the powers that be decide they're going to bring back the cartoon, picking up the continuity and moving it forward and reigniting, in fan service terms, the cartoon. I'm calling it now X-Men 97, named after the other cartoon, where the same or some of the same voice actors are back, the same art style is back, and it's got a new coat of paint. It's very clearly a fan service veneer, but they've done something not great. They've done something, well, it doesn't work. I hate to tell you that in my opinion, X-Men 97 doesn't do as much as it could do. Now, this is not me, just so we're clear, because I know I've been talking for 9 minutes. This is not me saying they're not doing it, you know, like, right. This isn't like, oh, that character should be an inch taller. They're ruining my X-Men. I could give a shit about the height of a comic book character. This is more a matter of developing the story and laying it out. Because in the course of processing the story and bringing it back, they have forgotten a very fundamental thing. That the people who were watching it now are not the teenagers they were when they watched it the first time. They're not the young kids they were. And you can't treat them the same way and expect the same results. Because what happens is they took these characters and they kept a lot of the old stuff. Now, in these constructions, the characters are very one-dimensional. Oh, that's the tough guy. Oh, that's the smart guy. Oh, that's the Southern woman. Oh, that's the Cajun man. And all their powers, all their abilities sort of stem in and around their one single identifying trait. She's Southern. She uses a lot of Southernisms and calls people sugar. Oh, he's Creole, so he sounds like he should be selling me some Zatarain's dirty rice. He's the tough, gruff guy, so he often says tough, gruff things. Ah, that's the German guy. He's blue. This single lower level ideation of things works when we're just playing off strong guy does things, tough silent type does things. But it's a real problem when your previous audience point surrogate character, a 90s teen who discovers she has powers, can no longer be a 90s teen in the 2020s because that doesn't work. That's not the same kind of teenager. There's an ocean, a gap between how I was in the mid-1990s as a teen and a young adult, as I am now as an older adult. And the teens today are not the teens from the 90s, no matter how much they want to bring grunge back, because it's fucking awesome. But they're not the same kind of teens. They've been through too many things. They've been through multiple collapses of the economic system. They've been through global atrocities. They've cared more about the world. They've been connected to the internet literally every second of their lives. They have vastly more input and connectivity than I ever did as a kid. And the children of the Atom might as well be the children of dial-up, the children of the 8-bit NES, the children of the corded landline telephone, the last children where you could, you know, have just a simple phone number or lead in paint and stuff. It's not the same thing. And to misunderstand that, to misappropriate that, and say, hey, look, now you're adults. Remember when you were teens? Be teens again. Doesn't hit the same. Because when I go back and look at the cartoon now, it's not an emotional connection I'm having. This isn't a moment where upset young John is watching a character, you know, fight and struggle against huge odds, feeling very angsty, when I would come home from school and feel very angsty. This is an adult looking back, intellectualizing what could be a emotional response, needs to be an emotional response, but an intellectual response, that nostalgia cash grab, that fan service reach isn't going to hit the same. It's not going to do the same thing. And the cartoon X-Men 97 fumbles that. Because if they wanted to, if they really wanted to, since they moved things forward, they brought characters in, they cut, changed characters' looks, they made new things, they've lost touch really with that whole central premise of you've got two camps of mutant thought, the idea of an MLK surrogate and a Malcolm X surrogate. They've brushed those aside in favor of just, hey, remember these characters more or less from the cartoon? It's an intellectual response to what could be an emotional issue. Were they going to really do more than fan service? They could take the remaining, because remember, X-Men didn't stop in the 90s. They've had X-Men books all the way through to the, you know, last week and still going. There's decades worth of stories. And they allude to them. They give it a wink and a nod. Hey, remember this character from that book? Hey, remember this? Oh, that's that lady. And it's just patronizing. It's just, ooh, if you're a smart comic reader, you know exactly who that is. But it doesn't advance the story. It doesn't do anything. It rings a little hollow because they want you to feel like you did when you were a teen, but now you're in your 30s and 40s, and it doesn't do that. You could aim this story for teens. You should. You need to. There's wonderful, brilliant X-Men stories. Stories of time travel and the death of this character, reshaping this and the start of that and the conflict over here and the discovery of this. There's loads of different stories you could tell that are very applicable to the modern day that would impact teens the way the original show impacted me. You could totally do that. They didn't, but they should have. They needed to. I've watched X-Men 97. I will continue to watch X-Men 97. But the hand wave of it, the, oh, you know that character, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, renders it a little hollow. It's nice to see, and I'm glad voice actors got work, and it's well animated, and it looks cool. But after 22 minutes, and really why isn't it 48? But after 22 minutes, I'm ready to just kind of go, oh, okay. I wonder what else I can watch today. I wish it were different. I wish it were more impactful. I wish it were meatier. I wish it took bigger risks. I wish it was less about, you know, reminding me that at one point I used to watch this cartoon, and it was more about, hey, I want to move you with a story, because that's what I did the first time. And I just wanted to go back to the way it was. Give that some thought. I'll talk to you tomorrow.